From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. Since 2011, no act has been shrouded in more mystery than the M Machine. With two EPs out now on Owsla, the Bay Area trio has crafted an entire world with legends, animation, comics, and of course, their wildly innovative brand of cinematic dance music. If the producers of the Blade Runner remake aren't already working with the M Machine, there's something wrong. The M Machine is on the Scream Tour with Marcus Schultz, but on Wednesday, April 24th, they'll be headlining the Masquerade in Atlanta as part of the Fourth Dimension EDM Monthly, and the Unce is giving away a pair of tickets as well as a meet and greet with the trio. More information at theunce.com. Let's get to my interview with Ben Swordlick of the M Machine. So tell me, you're in Charlotte right now. How's the Marcus Schultz Scream Tour going?
So far, it's been great. You know, we come into every tour with a certain amount of sort of research and concern, and we, you know, we're looking at who are the people who are showing up, how many of those people are going to be there to see us, and for those who aren't, for those who are there to see a headliner, in this case, Marcus Schultz, you know, what can we do to make sure that they are able to appreciate our show, too, because you know how people... certain genres can come in with relatively closed minds sometimes. Trance
sure.
has the stigma of being sort of like on the far end of that spectrum or the extreme side. Mm-hmm. And that's totally not the experience we're having. I think one thing that's kind of cool is that Marcus and ourselves have like a pretty like-minded sensibility when it comes to music, which is that it should move up and down, it should be melodic, and, you know, not just sort of in your face banging all the time. I think his fans have really been able to appreciate that. And then, of course, you know, the icing on the cake is that what with our last release, we've been able to dig up a lot of Machine fans in these cities as well. So the shows have been excellent.
I want to return to that sense of foreboding about, you know, bringing your music in front of different crowds. But you are a support act on this tour. You are touring with Marcus, but then you get to headline Atlanta on Wednesday, April 24th, as part of the Fourth Dimension series that they do. And as part of that show, the Unce is actually giving you a chance to have a meet and greet with a couple of your fans. I'm wondering, because your music is so deeply emotional, as you were alluding to, and has that sort of dynamic range, being able to go from, you know, big and in your face to more reserved and as I said, deeply emotional. Meeting your fans has got to be just a thrill, because, you know, it's not just people who are coming to party at your shows. It's people who have a deep connection to your music. And so what's an M Machine fan like?
That's a really good question. They're becoming more and more sort of, I don't want to use the word homogenous because it's like that, there's sort of a negative connotation there. But I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking about like a group of people who seem to specifically like the M Machine because of our bodies of work, or, you know, the image as a whole, and maybe not coming into it just having heard one song or a single or something like that. And, it's cool. It's a consistent experience. So, for example, if the M Machine fan comes in to a show, having listened hopefully to at least Metropolis Part 1 or Metropolis Part 2, maybe only one of them, that's fine. And it seems like, you know, what we're hearing is we like the body of work, we like the liner notes that you wrote, the storyline that goes behind it, you know, the cover art is cool. And it's like a lot of people seem to be getting that, you know, we try to write something that's cohesive from start to finish and not just a, you know, collection of singles. You know, we'll do a meet and greet before the show, say hi to these people, and we kind of hear that. And what's exciting about it is we know that they're going to kind of get the same experience when they see the live show. So as much as our music sort of varies on the emotional spectrum and the energy spectrum on any one of our releases, so does our show. So we tend to, you know, come out the door with something big and energetic and exciting, and then we'll take the crowd all the way down to some of our sort of most emotional and mellow tracks and then ramp it up for the end. And so it's a consistent experience. It's cool to see that people are catching on to that, starting to appreciate it. But yeah, I like that question because I think one thing that you can never really predict is what your fan base is going to be like. If you, you know, talk to people who have been around for years and years, they probably manage to sort of eventually blend it down to, you know, the people who really get where they're coming from. But especially an artist who comes up and sort of cuts his teeth with a single, you know, like a big hit single or something like that, you never really know who's going to be coming out to your shows. It might not be people with the same sort of artistic sensibility that you have. Or maybe it is. Maybe you don't care. You know, maybe it's just trying to sell tickets. But in our case, it's really, really nice to see that, you know, what we're putting into it seems to be what people are getting out of it. And that was always a question mark. So it's good.
And I'm glad you mentioned, you know, you're not coming up on the back of a single, something that just hits the pop charts and explodes. You know, you're going into a show with Marcus Schultz, for instance, which is a gathering of trans fans on the whole. There's also M Machine fans there. But what you're playing is not party music. It's much more cerebral. There's a whole concept behind it. Do you feel like you need to work harder to get the fans who are not familiar with your work on board with the concept as a whole? I mean, we're talking about a really specific story that you're telling, or do you feel like the music that you're making, the sorts of emotions that you've packed into there, transcend an understanding of, for instance, you know, Fritz Lang's Metropolis, transcends the sort of the symbolism, and you can get people on board at different levels, either because they deeply feel the music or because, you know, they're really entranced in the story of the M Machine.
Right. So I think I understand what you're trying to get at. And one thing is for sure that's something that we really want to make sure that we leave with someone if they come to see the live show specifically. The DJ set can be an entirely different sort of an entirely different effort. You know, obviously you're going to hear a lot of M Machine music, but one thing about when we're up there and we're singing and Andy's performing visuals on stage is that because, you know, we're basically taking you through our music as we sort of like want to put it together. And then on top of that, Andy is performing his video show now, which he does from stage. And, you know, he also sings live like the rest of us do. I think we're able to sort of push that imagery and get people to sort of acknowledge that storyline if they want to. Alternatively, you also have people who really just want to come out. They want to jump up and down, fist pump for a while, and just sort of get hyped. That's totally, totally awesome, too. So, yeah, we see both. You see the people who really want to, you know, communicate with you on Tumblr after the show, and they're the ones digging into the storyline, and they know about our, you know, the writers we work with, and the other artists, too, and visual artists for us, and, you know, our storyline in general. But you've also just got a bunch of, you know, crazy techno kids who just want to have a party, and that's totally not something we're trying to fight against, because it is high energy. You know, we're talking a lot about this sort of like emotional up and down, but let's be real. I mean, all night it's dance music, and it's definitely a party as well. So it's not like we are leaving out the tour there to sort of just go ape shit.
Ghosts in the Machine, featuring Penny Birdrabbit from Metropolis Part 2.
While it is dance music, there is an edge of darkness to it. There is that darkness there that it reminds me like the Billy Idols and the Depeche Modes of the
right.
80s, but even darker than some of them could get, you know?
And
it's driving in its high intensity. I wonder, are the three of you sharing a sort of, you know, darker edge, or is it that dance music on the whole is so upbeat and lively that you just really want to dig into to the nitty gritty of it? I mean, you've even got a track, Schadenfreude, you know, like the happiness of somebody else's despair and defeat.
Right.
You know, it seems like you're pulling back the skin a little bit, and I'm wondering where that's coming from, because, you know, you seem like a pretty well-adjusted guy.
Yeah, well, you know, the general story arc that we wrote, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you would wonder, you know, is there some kind of, like, brewing anger or sort of, like, deep set cynicism amongst us, and it's maybe not quite so extreme. It's just that, you know, what we were inspired by when we started writing Metropolis was, you know, some dark shit, some epic stuff. And for starters, that was the movie you already referenced, which is Spirit Lines Metropolis. And I think as our story came together, what you started to see in the first half of Metropolis Part 1 was a collection of music that we had sort of written over the course of a whole year. And so, you know, that release was the best of what we had at the time, and I think it was a good way to sort of launch off the energetic side of our project. And then as we started to put together Part 2, we realized that we were basically finishing up a pretty sad story. You know, we were wrapping up a dystopian dark city saga, and, you know, the music followed. But that's not to say that we are only inspired by that kind of stuff. It's interesting you bring up the 80s, because we talk a lot about that sort of discrete difference between two sides of the 80s that we love, because we're definitely inspired by a lot of 80s music, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll be listening to Tears for Fears and Duran Duran and loving it and, you know, getting uplifted and stuff like that. And, you know, these are people
sure.
who like dark songs as well. But then, you know, the flip side to it was The Cure, right? And then it's like, you know, now you're talking about a whole different sensibility, but like that same classic 80s style. So, yeah, all of that stuff makes its way in, and it's not one of us or, you know, us as a whole being, you know, cynical or anything like that. I think it was just sort of like a pendulum swing for us. So we were writing a lot of club-oriented sort of party time tracks when we were very, very first starting out writing. And what mm-hmm. clicked and what started to feel like something special for us was when we started to get more cinematic, more thoughtful, and a little bit more disciplined with our music. And most importantly, when we started to throw away any preconceived, like, genre sort of expectations. You know, certainly we haven't written the DJ friendly track in a long time, and we definitely don't adhere to own tempo or genre or anything like that.
Absolutely.
So that's the long winded way of saying you're half right and it's half random.
And, you know, it seems like such deliberate composition that makes it that, you know, whoever tries to label your tracks as electro or bass music or indie dance or synth pop or whatever, I mean, it's got to be frustrating as hell for anyone who's got to try and stick your CD in the right bin at the record store.
Right.
And I think that comes from, you know, that devotion to the lighter side, the Tears for Fears, and also the darker side with The Cure. And I wonder, it feels like maybe some of your influence is coming from another figure who was very involved in, you know, that 80s culture that grew out of it and made the 90s what it was, and that's Trent Reznor, and bringing some of that, you know, the breaks and the 80s sound into the metal scene. And I think that cinematic essence that you're going for is so Nine Inch Nails, but way more skewed towards the dance scene, if you'll permit my comparison.
Yeah, well, the coolest thing about someone like Reznor, and I think Tom York fits into this category perfectly as well,
mm-hmm.
maybe Damon Albarn too, of Gorillaz.
Yeah.
I think that these are the dudes who probably came up through more traditional, you know, band sort of sensibilities, right? So playing guitar, sure. playing piano, you know, they're live vocalists.
Blur being a very mainstream act.
Right, but what was so cool about them is that they 100% saw the writing on the wall. They knew that dance music and electronic music, computer music was going to be the future. I mean, they saw that way before, you know, it was obvious to the rest of the world. And instead of sort of being those purists who rejected digital recording and rejected synthesizers and stuff like that, they kind of just adopted them, brought them in, and nobody said, oh, okay, this is electro music, this is club music or something like that. People still address their songs just like any song, you know? This is a band who happens to use synthesizers, and I think, man, I think Trent Reznor is a great example because, you know, this is a guy who sort of like fiercely likes to combine his talents. I mean, this dude could sit down and just riff on the keyboard, right? But a lot of times he's sitting in front of Pro Tools, you know, fucking around with synthesizers. So,
right.
So yeah, I think that's a great reference. Also, the music we're writing currently, just by sort of coincidence, is probably even more influenced by Nine Inch Nails than any of the stuff that came, you know, before, or any of the stuff that you've heard. So it's cool that you're digging up some of that reference, because it's there. Definitely there.
It's funny. You know, you mentioned their bringing of electronic equipment and techniques and software into the relatively straight ahead rock scene. It almost seems like you're bringing these cinematic sounds and effects and moods from that world back into the DJ scene. So again, everything is cyclical, as we can say about anything.
Yeah, sure. I guess at this point in the conversation, it's worth mentioning that, you know, it's not like we are blazing a trail in that department. I mean, obviously we definitely subscribe to, you know, the sort of need to bring a cinematic epicness to our tracks. But, you know, you gotta look at some of these dudes who have done that really well for a long time. I think Nero is the example that I would usually say right now as a group who totally comes from, you know, a similar angle. Nobody does the sort of epic cinematic vibe like they do. They're definitely new friends and heroes of ours, so important to give credit where it's due.
So we found ourselves in a new place, and it's clear here that we're not alone. Faces that we've never seen before, and it feels like we never left home. At least we try to be honest about the lies, and it seems we feel so threatened by faces that we've never seen before, and it feels like we never left home.
Faces from the M Machine's debut EP, Metropolis Part 1.
I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the Trailblazers and also honoring the idols. I don't think that there was a pop song that came out in 2012 that was more a tribute to another act than Bruno Mars' Locked Out of Heaven, because, I mean, you know, a lot of people said, hey, this sounds like a Police song, and he said, hell yeah, it sounds like a Police song.
Right,
that is
right.
One of my favorite bands, and to make something that could even be compared to that, that's awesome. Tell me, how did you guys get involved in that project? Is it a thing where, you know, you and 100 other acts throw remixes into the ring and yours got luckily picked, or is it that they actually reached out to you for the remix, which makes them look very cool for being able to hone in on you?
Yeah, well, man, some of these majors are getting pretty good. I mean, they've got people on the ground figuring out who the sort of, like, you know, interesting remix opportunities are coming from. So, the answer to your question is the latter. It is, you know, they did reach out to us, and, you know, they generally present you with some kind of, you know, opportunity to do the remix within some ridiculous timeline where you have, like, you know, no time at all to do it. But
right.
Obviously, if you're interested in, you know, compensation for starters, and then you know, if you like the look and you're cool with the track, then it's something to jump onto. Then again, this was kind of a unique offer because the email, you know, the opportunity from Bruno's label came in the day after the three of us had actually heard this song for the first time. And we were sort of like instant fans. This was like on our way back from a show in Santa Cruz. We were just driving up the 101, and that song came on, and we couldn't quite figure it out. We were like, okay, so clearly this is, you know, some kind of brand new pop influence version of The Police meets Rihanna meets Gautier or something like that.
And, right, you know, right.
Usually some kind of horrible Frankenstein pop thing like that is going to sort of offend you in some ways, especially if you come from a less than pop, you know, sensibility.
Right.
But we loved it. We totally loved it. We thought it was a chick singer. We thought it was a female vocalist. And we were like, who is this? It's totally awesome. This song is cool. And then that was the end of it. And then we got home and boom, right, me and Boxy. How would you guys like to remix Bruno Mars Walk Out of Heaven? And we were down.
Wow.
We were totally down. It's cool. I think that was the fastest piece of music we've ever sort of started and finished, delivered to date, probably going all the way backwards too. Just sort of worked. Everything we tried, whereas usually we throw out probably 95% of the effort, it just sort of clicked. And it was fun. That was the first time. I guess technically we've done a 170 BPM halftime drum step style track with Shadow and Rose Garden before, but this one had like a little bit more of that bass music dubstep vibe to it as well, and then of course a whole drum and bass section, which is the first for us. So we kind of just threw out all the different ideas that we wanted to cram into one remix, and somehow it managed to land cohesively, I think.
Absolutely, and on one of the biggest songs of the year, a couple of verses in, you already know it and you're singing along, and that's a damn good pop song, and you did wonders with it, and that's a credit in itself.
Thanks. Yeah, we definitely get that polarized response. You know, I think probably one of the most common criticisms of the track is, oh, I love what you guys did, but I hate the vocals. You know, where can we get the instrumental on it? I always wish that I could sort of address people individually and be like, hey, take a sec, you know, step back from what you know about, you know, this song being overplayed on the radio and what you think about Bruno Mars, and just, you know, sort of consider it as a piece of music. He's a totally excellent vocalist. The song is well written, and it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't think you could listen to it without the vocals. I think it's important. Then again, I also remixed it, so I don't really have to make it. I'm obviously biased.
I could talk to you for hours about music and specifically about the M Machine, but we're running low on time. Tell me what we can expect from you soon, and I'm talking about studio work. I guess the book is closed on the Metropolis story. What is next? Because obviously your fans want you to conquer another big epic.
Yeah, I mean, we do too. I think, for starters, we need to wrap up a couple of collaborations. We're not supposed to talk quite yet about who we're working with right now, but I think part two opens some cool doors for us. So we'll get to write music with some of our heroes, some of the people that sort of got up into this whole business in the first place. So a couple of collaborations need to get wrapped up. Those are going really well. And then we're collecting a pretty awesome body of starter tracks, and this is the stuff that we generally try and get to maybe a point of, like, you know, 40% or 50% done, and then we hold on to them for a minute, and we collect a lot of the ego and decide which ones we go all the way, which ones we kind of either put on the back burner or just sort of forget about.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting a lot of those. We can start them on a bus. We did a lot of that before we went out on tour with Marcus. Specifically, how they'll come together, you know, will it be an album? Will it be an EP? Are we trying to do single releases? Like, that's kind of still up in the air. And to be honest, we're still fleshing out what is most important to us, which is the imagery. We have some cool ideas. We have some really cool ideas to move on from the Metropolis saga without sort of alienating anybody who really liked that attitude. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that's big, but we're writing tons of music and we're getting a lot of cool ideas for sort of our next storyline, even if it's not, you know, specifically a chapter book like the first time around. But we're just writing a lot and it feels good. Like being back in the studio, which of course I'm not right now, but that's sort of our happy place. And we're pretty excited once this tour ends to get back there and start to see some of these starter tracks too.
And your fans are waiting on it too. And I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this. When's the damn Dog Blood remix coming out?
God, I swear I would tell you if I knew. Basically, we would have put that out a long time ago. There was ideas to give that one out for free on the Nest. Then it sort of got upgraded to a full Ausla release. And then now we're talking about potentially it being related to a Boys Noise Records release. Obviously, Boys Noise is involved in that track as well. And then everything sort of got thrown up in the air because it looks like they're going to try and do some other official remixes of that song, or at least that release as well. So it really is just a big question mark. I think at this point, that's probably the single most common interaction we have online right now, when the Dog Blood release came out, which we totally appreciate. The only thing I can say is we're playing pretty much the full track out every show. So if you want to hear it, just, you know, come to a show.
That's the thing to do. Ben Swerdlick, this was a delight. The M Machine on tour now with Marcus Schultz. Catch them April 24th in Atlanta headlining and get a chance for a meet and greet if you enter the contest. More details on theunts.com. Thank you so much for being on the Unts podcast. This was a joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Good questions and really good chat. So thanks for having us.
A King Alone from Metropolis Part 1, taking us out today. Special thanks to my guest, Ben Swerdlick of The M Machine. Their latest EP, Metropolis Part 2, was released earlier this year on Ausla, and they're on the nationwide Scream Tour with Marcus Schultz. You can catch a headlining set from The M Machine at Fourth Dimension, taking place Wednesday, April 24th at The Masquerade in Atlanta, Georgia. The Unts is giving away a pair of tickets to that show, as well as a meet and greet with the band. We've got some other incredible contests going on now. You can win free festival passes to Wakarusa, Electric Forest, Moonrise, and Lightning in a Bottle. All you've got to do is go to theunts.com/contests and enter to win. We've also got tickets to Infrasound Music Festival taking place May 31st through June 2nd in Black River Falls, Wisconsin, halfway between Minneapolis and Madison. The Music, Art, and Camping Festival, now in its second year, has a killer lineup which features sets from Tipper, Grammatic, Thriftworks, Hero Bust, Liquid Stranger, Marty Party, Emancipator, and more. Lots of cool surprises in store for festival goers at Infrasound. $85 general admission tickets are now available at tickets.theunts.com. Please visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unts podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theunts.com. Join the conversation at The Unts Podcast on Twitter.